ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM this Christmas Eve. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, Britain's royal family embarrassed again as the latest batch of Epstein files raises new questions for the King's brother, Andrew. Also, the Prime Minister recommends bravery awards for those who rush to help others at the Bondi attack. And we reveal how Santa keeps his cool during visits to Australia, a water-cooled red suit.
Very hot when I come to Northern Australia, so I've rigged up a system that cools me with cold water from an ice bath. It's in my esky. Ho, 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 ho.
Wide-ranging new gun and protest laws have come into effect in New South Wales today, with the state's premier flagging more reforms are on the way as a result of the Bondi tragedy. At the federal level, the Prime Minister is continuing to rebuff calls for a royal commission into anti-Semitism and the terrorist attack. But the brave community members and first responders could receive official recognition, with Mr Albanese suggesting to the Governor-General a special honours list is warranted. Alison Chow reports.
In the darkness of tragedy, the bravery and heroism of first responders and ordinary Australians shone through. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
The attack did show us the worst of humanity, hatred, anti-Semitism, violence. It also showed us the best of humanity, extraordinary acts of bravery and courage, acts of kindness for fellow Australians. And these awards would be announced in 2026.
But the Prime Minister isn't announcing a royal commission, something the Coalition and some Jewish community leaders have been pushing for. The federal government says it would take too long and change needs to be swifter. But former Home Affairs Department Secretary Mike Pezzullo claims it could be fast-tracked.
There's nothing to stop the Royal Commission being designed in terms of its letters patent to report more immediately. In fact, I'd report more quickly than the end of April, which is the Richardson deadline. And if you said to the commissioners, this is your first area of priority, do it in 2 to 3 months, they would, of course, pursue that instruction accordingly.
But others warn against a rushed response. Geoffrey Watson SC is a director at the Centre for Public Integrity and an expert in commissions of inquiry.
I think it's too early. I would like to know more about the problem rather than conduct a royal commission on the basis of what we know now. I think if we look at it in terms of the attack, which was obviously dreadful, but it riles up emotions, we may be looking at this problem the wrong way. If you ask me, the royal commission should be well thought through, deferred and taken up when we can bring a cool solution to it, not now, not in the heat.
The Coalition has released its suggested terms of reference for a Commonwealth Royal Commission into anti-Semitism, urging the government to inquire into the role of governments, the education and the arts sector in preventing anti-Semitism. Geoffrey Watson says a focus on anti-Semitism would be leaving out other vital components.
I fear that because of Bondi, we may be looking too narrowly and focusing upon anti-Semitism. Well, obviously, the bigger problem here is radicalisation, discrimination, racism, which is a far larger issue. And if we're going to conquer the problems and make this a more civil society, we should be looking more broadly at those three issues.
He's also cautioning against what he calls knee-jerk reactions, including the new laws passed in New South Wales today. As well as stricter gun restriction, there's also tighter control over protests, giving police the power to enact a blanket refusal of all public assemblies for up to 3 months after a terrorist incident. Anne Toomey is an Emerita Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Sydney. She warns the new laws could have a chilling effect on exercising freedom of speech, and an alliance of activist and community groups have already flagged a constitutional challenge.
In this case, the argument is that laws breach the implied freedom of political communication, and part of the test there is about whether those laws are really narrowly focused upon achieving a legitimate outcome, so protection of the community, safety and protection of social cohesion. But are achieving that in a way that puts the minimum kind of burden on political communication. So it's very, very hard to do that when you're putting a bill through very, very quickly in Parliament.
Constitutional law expert Professor Anne Toomey from the University of Sydney. Alison Shaw with that report. And a Perth court has heard this afternoon that a raid on a Perth home yesterday discovered 6 registered rifles, a bomb-making shopping list, flags of terrorist organisations and thousands of rounds of ammunition. The raid was on the home of 39-year-old Martin Thomas Glynn, who police allege had pledged support for the Bondi gunman. The latest batch of the so-called Epstein files is causing more embarrassment for Britain's royal family, with emails emerging that appear to have been sent by the former Prince Andrew. A message to Jeffrey Epstein's associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, signed by a person using the initial A, sends greetings from Balmoral, the location of the monarch's Scottish estate. The sender goes on to ask Maxwell if she's found any new, quote, inappropriate friends. Rachel Mealy reports.
Just in time for Christmas, a present the British royal family didn't want or need. The US Department of Justice has released another batch of files related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Royal commentator Richard Bertelson says the new emails implicate the former British prince.
Well, it just continues to add to this drip, drip, drip that we've had on Andrew since, I don't know, really after Epstein was jailed in 2010-11.
The newly released emails in question are signed by someone using the initial A. In one, the sender asks Ghislaine Maxwell if she's found any new inappropriate friends. Speaking on Canadian television, Richard Bertelson says a number of details point to the former prince.
But, you know, I think it really just leads to this overall picture that he was very, very linked to Ghislaine Maxwell. We knew that they were very close friends. Again, what these words, what these connotations of these words, inappropriate friends, means in this context, very difficult to say.
The former Prince Andrew, now known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, has long denied any wrongdoing associated with his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. In 2019, he sat down for an interview with the BBC in an attempt to clear his name.
You stayed at that New York mansion several days. I'm wondering how long...
But I was doing a number of other things while I was there.
But you were staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay.
In 2021, Virginia Giuffre filed a lawsuit alleging rape and sexual abuse against then-Prince Andrew. She claimed she'd been forced to have sex with him on multiple occasions when she was 17, a minor under US law. While he denied her allegations, he settled the lawsuit a year later at a reported cost of $16 million US dollars. Andrew was stripped of his royal titles in October this year and evicted from his residences. Commentator Richard Bertelson says the latest tranche of Epstein files is bad news for the royal family at Christmas.
Well, it's extremely unwelcome news. I mean, I think, you know, on a human scale, I don't think they would want to see a member of their family, continue to look extremely badly, or worse, and embarrass himself, embarrass them.
But it's not just Andrew in the spotlight. With every release of new information from the US Department of Justice, the focus on President Donald Trump intensifies. Today's documents contain hundreds of references to Donald Trump, as well as 2 subpoenas sent to Mar-a-Lago, his home in Florida. Corey Brett-Schneider is Professor of Political Science at Brown University.
Now, the question, of course, and the point of the legislation wasn't just to learn more about Epstein, it was to see the president's involvement, whether he was more involved with Epstein or whether he was even implicated in some of Epstein's crimes. And the idea that this was somehow going to clear things up and show that he wasn't involved is over.
He says regardless of any legal questions, the mounting weight of evidence in the Epstein files points to political upheaval for the president.
Rachel Mealy reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Well, Christmas is known as a time for giving, and some gifts are priceless. This festive season, organ donation advocates are urging Australians to consider registering to save a life. In Perth, a father of three is spending Christmas with an American student who came to his rescue. Isabel Masali prepared this report.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
This is my family.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
As 27-year-old Cassidy Feeney touched down at Perth Airport, she was greeted with flowers and a big hug from a man she's never met. A warm welcome to a family who she'll be spending Christmas with.
It's really special. They have been so kind since I've been here and treated me like family. Felt so much love.
Meeting the person that saved my life was full of just about every emotion you can imagine. I mean, we were nervous, we were scared, we were excited.
That's Perth father of three, Gennaro Rapanese. 6 years ago, sickness forced him to begin desperately searching for someone who could change his life. With Australia having a low donor pool, he had to widen the search.
When I was battling leukemia, we put out a desperate worldwide plea to find a donor. Without a bone marrow donor, there's no question I wouldn't be here today.
Cassidy Feeney was just 18 when she was introduced to a bone marrow registry at college.
Our sorority offered points in a competition we were doing if we signed up. So they pretty much get all the freshmen in the different Greek organizations to sign up for the bone marrow registry in their first year. Once they called, they told me I was a perfect match, and there was really no question I was going to do it.
She's not alone in providing a complete stranger with a gift of a lifetime. In central Queensland, truck driver Johnny Toomai is looking forward to spending his first Christmas at home with his new lungs.
I said to the doctors after the transplant, this is the best Christmas gift I've ever had and probably going to be the best for the rest of my life.
Before the surgery, he was struggling with a progressive and preventable lung disease and needed oxygen 24 hours a day. Last year, he and his partner moved to Brisbane to be close to Prince Charles Hospital if a transplant opportunity came up. There were three calls for possible transplants, but none eventuated until one morning at 2 o'clock. He felt like it happened in slow motion, a moment he won't forget.
You know, and I thank my donor in my own little way. I'm driving a truck, for example. I'm by myself, and I can thank whoever I want in the truck. No one's going to hear me. Only that bloke upstairs. So I thank my donor every day. It's just such a precious gift.
Donate Life says around 50 people die each year waiting for a transplant in Australia. Josephine Rioch from Donate Life says Christmas is the perfect time to consider registering.
Make that decision during the good times. Talk about it during the good times with your family, because that's a much easier discussion to have around the Christmas table. You know, go turn by turn. What's your wishes about donation than it is to have in a hospital waiting room? So it's just fantastic if people can give it a thought, talk to their families about what they've decided.
And she says the next important step is to register that wish to be a donor. Meanwhile, for Cassidy Feeney in Perth, the chance to meet the family who she helped from the other side of the world is a special Christmas gift. As for the recipient...
Because of her, I feel fantastic now. My health is good. The cancer's gone. It's nothing short of a gift of life.
That's Perth man Gennaro Rapanese. That report from Isabel Masali, Veronica Buck and Katrina Bevan. While many people will be sitting down to feast at tables groaning under the weight of Christmas fare, others who aren't so lucky will need a helping hand to enjoy the special occasion. Our reporter Miwa Bloomer filed this report from a place where everyone is welcome to share in the Christmas celebration.
The atmosphere's great, food's lovely.
Terry Skies is a regular on Christmas Day at the Bill Cruz Foundation. He's been visiting the church in Ashfield, Sydney's inner west for over 20 years and often stops by for a meal.
Probably coming for Christmas 10 years.
The Bill Cruz Foundation has over 1,000 volunteers and provides over 500,000 meals annually. On the morning we visit, hundreds of people from all walks of life arrive at the Loaves and Fishes restaurant. Jamie is another regular.
It brings your spirit, like I said, brings your spirits up, makes you more yourself.
This community hub provides people in need with health services like dentists and doctors, but it's famous for hosting one of the largest Christmas lunches in the country. Reverend Bill Cruz, who started the foundation, has been hosting festivities at his church for nearly 40 years.
Christmas Day, 1986, we got two people. The next year, we got 13, and we thought, we're on a high here. The next year, we got 11, and the next year, we got 400. So it just took off.
Thousands of people attend his Christmas lunches. And he speaks fondly of the festive season while walking through the chapel, lined with shelves, ready to be stacked with presents.
After we've done all our church services, it opens up as Santa's cave.
The huge celebration is a chance for those who can't afford food or have nowhere to go to gather.
A lot of people come, say, because the children are with the ex and they've got nowhere to go. And so they come here and they'll talk to somebody else who's in the same boat or something like that, and they'll get solace from each other.
In recent years, the cost of living has hit hard. He's seen more and more people who have jobs coming through the door.
We get mothers all the time who have to decide between, do I do this for my kids or do I starve?
It's something that's reflected nationally. An Anglicare report earlier this year found a full-time minimum wage worker has just $33 left after paying for rent, food and transportation. Ronnie Khan is the founder and CEO of food charity OzHarvest. She says food insecurity is the worst it's been since she launched the organisation.
When I started OzHarvest 20 years ago, we didn't have as much data as we have now. But there was an estimate that there were 1 million households that might need food at any given time. And here we are 20 years later, and I'm telling you that that number has trebled.
OzHarvest delivers food to 1,500 charities and has 1,227 charities on the waiting list. They've amped up their deliveries leading up to Christmas, rescuing over 400 tons of food per week from supermarkets and other sources.
Christmas is the most challenging time of the year because many charities we support temporarily close. Our goal is to distribute as much food in advance of those services closing so that people might have food for the holiday period.
Back at the Bill Cruz Foundation, Seacom is packing food for his next delivery.
I love it. It's a really rewarding job.
He's been working as a van driver here for 2 years and will be delivering on Christmas Day.
Oh, it's a very exciting time. Everyone's keen to get that Christmas hampers.
That positive outlook is something Bill Cruz is passionate about.
Merry Christmas. And don't believe all the bulldust about there can't be happiness in life, because there can.
That's the Reverend Bill Cruz speaking to Miwa Bloomer in Sydney. While many of us are winding down for a festive break, for those in the agricultural sector, it's business as usual. Kimberly Price reports.
For farmers, life on the land never really stops. As Christmas tables across the country plate up turkey with cranberry sauce, Daryl Deutscher will put his feet up after another hectic year.
There's no disasters, yeah, just get up and do the basic checking and feeding and incubators and eggs and poults and things like that. Hopefully all the other chores are done, and then we go out for Christmas lunch.
As the owner and manager of Deutscher's Turkey Farm in Dadswell Bridge in Western Victoria, Daryl Deutscher says the lead up to Christmas is a busy time.
6,000 birds for the year, and probably about 75% of our production goes out at Christmas time. People always make the comment, oh, it's Christmas time, you're getting busy now, but it just raises from busy to stupid in the last couple of months.
And after 44 years working his independent turkey farm, he's become a bit of an expert on how to cook the perfect bird and likes to keep things traditional.
A lot of people brine them and barbecue them and all sorts of things there. I think we'll be having turkey breast or something like that, yep.
Nathan Albrecht and his family work around 2,200 hectares of wheat, barley, beans, canola, lentils and hay in the Antwerp-Glenley area, around 70 kilometres northwest of Horsham in Western Victoria. They've been harvesting for around a month now, with another 2 weeks to go, and then he'll start baling the hay.
We're starting to make a dent into it. We've got about 450 hectares to go, but if we have a good run with weather, it shouldn't take us too long to knock it off.
And with the end in sight, he plans to take it easy tomorrow.
It's normally quite a big do with plenty of food and laughter, catching up with everyone again, and then we'll come home and, yeah, relax.
On Nathan Albrecht's Christmas list is plenty of rain come autumn.
If it really didn't rain up till then and we got big rains then, it'd be fantastic.
Lockie Sutherland runs a dairy farm at Larpin, just east of Colac in southwest Victoria. He doesn't get to take Christmas off.
Yeah, so Christmas Day for us involves usually get to the dairy about 5 o'clock, start milking 6, usually back to the house around 10 o'clock. Present opening around the tree, that sort of stuff goes on then, and then back to the dairy 3 o'clock, milking the cows by 4.
However, Christmas on a dairy farm is still a family affair.
My son, he's 16, he'll be helping, and my wife also helps, so that's the one milking of the year that she does.
Lockie Sutherland has been in the clutches of drought for much of the year, but a late rain has helped things green up in his part of the world. And being up so early with the cows on Christmas morning means sometimes Lockie Sutherland catches a glimpse of the big man in red.
We often hear some noises around that time, but yeah, Santa has been and gone usually by the time I get up.
Dairy farmer Lockie Sutherland from Larpin in southwestern Victoria. Kimberly Price reporting. Well, Christmas is a hot and sweaty time in many parts of Australia, but this year Santa Claus has found an innovative solution to beat the heat. Our national regional reporter Erin Park secured an exclusive interview with the elusive man in red for a sneak peek at the high-tech engineering helping him deliver gifts this festive season.
It's a busy evening at the annual community Christmas market in Broome.
What would you like for Christmas?
A microphone.
A microphone? Are you going to be a singer?
I want to sing.
The star of the show, as always, is Santa Claus, cloaked in his trademark red velvet attire.
Merry Christmas!
It's a familiar scene, but if you look closely, there's something different about Santa.
Very hot when I come to Northern Australia, so I've rigged up a system that cools me with cold water from an ice bath. It's in my esky.
This year, Santa's travelling with a throne, devised from a 40-litre esky and rigged up to keep him cool.
Take a look inside there. Oh, can you hear the crispness of the water as I open that up? Listen to this.
Wow, so it's full of ice.
That's right, that's right. And I don't put beer in it because that's not what Santa does. I just put ice and then it flows up through a little pump that I have in the bottom and in and around my body.
Small hoses run up under his Santa suit, circulating cold water through a network of tubes strapped to his torso, just out of sight. Santa reckons his elves developed the system with the assistance of the CSIRO to help him adjust to the heat and humidity that's typical in northern towns like Broome in the lead-up to Christmas.
Who knew that Santa Claus was so innovative?
Well, it's my elves. They are so good.
Local mother of five, Katrina, stops by for a chat.
We just bumped into Santa Claus and Sonny had a nice photo with him and he's a bit shocked right now. They get so caught up in their games and stuff. And, you know, Santa Claus just brings so much happiness to all the children around the world in general. And I just think it's a good part of, you know, the childhood.
And this Santa Claus has got something a bit different about him. Did you notice he had a hose system rigged up?
Yeah, I actually did. I thought it might have been a life jacket underneath, but I was wondering why he had a hose underneath of his outfit.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
It's an esky ice cooling system.
Oh, what?
Because Santa Claus comes from the North Pole and he gets real hot and sweaty when he comes to Northern Australia.
Oh, so it keeps him cool. Boys, did you hear that? But underneath his jacket, it keeps him nice and cool because it's too hot in Broome here for Santa.
We don't want Santa Claus to get heat stroke.
Oh, definitely not. He's got presents to deliver. Hope he comes to my house. I'm a busy woman.
People are saying, what's wrong with Santa? He's freezing. I even get a little frostbite sometimes. It's so cold.
After several solid hours of laughs, photos and gift giving, it's time for Santa to hit the road to a new community and a new climate.
Life can sometimes be a little bit hard, but that's why Christmas comes along and these are the things that make us happy to be alive. So, Merry Christmas to all, and have a great new year as well.
Ho, 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 ho.
Merry Christmas! Bye-bye.
Bye, Santa!
The The one and only Father Christmas. Let's hope he keeps cool overnight. He was speaking to Erin Park. And that's PM for this week and this year. Thank you very much for your company in 2025. We'll be back on Monday, January the 5th. I'm Samantha Donovan. I hope for everyone celebrating, it's a very happy Christmas for all. May it be a season of peace and goodwill. Good night.